Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. Justin Torres's debut novel, We the Animals, became a national bestseller and is now a major motion picture. In the novel, Torres gives readers an intimate look into the sometimes volatile life of one family in upstate New York, a white mother, a Puerto Rican father, and three brothers who function like a pack. The brothers, Manny, Joel, and the narrator, grow up together over the course of the novel, which begins when the narrator is 6 years old. I'm joined in the studio by Justin Torres to discuss his novel and the recently released film adaptation. Justin Torres, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
So the sibling relationship is really at the heart of We the Animals. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to focus on three brothers?
So the book is, in a lot of ways is about a family very similar to my own family. And I think I started writing about the experience of brotherhood, the experience of kind of being a sibling in this kind of pack of siblings, because it was something that was on my mind. It was something I was interested in, especially because at that point I'd kind of lost touch with my family and I wasn't really in contact with my brothers. And it was a kind of way of writing back to them and kind of rediscovering that childhood that was gone.
So since the family was a lot like yours, I've seen that the novel is said to be semi-autobiographical. Mm-hmm. In what other ways is the life of this family similar to your own?
My parents were teenagers when they started having kids. My father's Puerto Rican, my mother's white, and my mother worked in a brewery, like the character in the book. So all of that is true, or the facts of my life. But the book itself is fiction. It's omission, it's exaggeration, it's invention, it's using metaphor and poetry and all of the kind of tools of fiction to create story. The emotional truth is the emotional truth of my life, and that's kind of what I wanted to get at. But I thought if I found the best way to get at it was fiction.
Why did you think fiction was a better way to get at that emotional truth rather than writing a true autobiography?
Yeah, well, I mean, truth is weird, right? I don't make any claims on the truth. I think if you ask anybody in my family to write a book about those years, you would get a completely different version of events. You get a completely different book. Everybody has their own truth. I think, especially when you're dealing with memory and you're dealing with childhood memory, it's not, for me, it's not very interesting what exactly happened, pinning down what exactly happened, what is true and false, right? That's for journalism. I think what's interesting is, how do you talk about the experience of being a child in a chaotic family? How do you talk about the experience of being overwhelmed by both love and failure or violence, about the kind of wildness of childhood? That's what I wanted to write about, and fiction's the way to do that.
Could you give an example of this from the book?
So there's a chapter in the book called The Lake where the father teaches the son how to swim by basically throwing him in the middle of the lake. And there's this cliche, right, the sink or swim, this idea of a parenting style, right, that's like sink or swim, or a style of being in the world that's like sink or swim. And this was very familiar to me. This was how I was taught a lot about a lot of different kinds of experiences, right? Just be thrown in the middle of it and know that your survival depends on your ability to kind of navigate this completely foreign territory or foreign world. And because I knew these characters so well, I knew, well, what would a swimming lesson be like? I mean, that never happened to me. Did things like that happen? Yeah, absolutely. And rather than rely on memory to kind of get all of the mundane facts of life in there, I created a story. I used fiction to get at that, what I knew to be true about that kind of experience.
So you've mentioned some problematic things that readers might think about what the father has done with the mm-hmm. sink or swim. Mm-hmm. You also mentioned some of the violence that is apparent in this family relationship. And there is violence between siblings, between the siblings and the parents, between the parents. So why did you decide to include this aspect of the family's relationship?
One of the things that happened in my life, kind of when I was in my 20s and I would go out into the world and I would meet people, make new friends or whatever, you know, in those moments where you're getting to know somebody and it's kind of intimate and you're kind of like, oh, what was your childhood like? And you tell the stories, right? Inevitably, people would say, oh, you had a really dysfunctional family, or oh, you had a really abusive family, or these terms that for me are much too concrete. They're much too dismissive. They're too clean and orderly, and it drove me crazy. I mean, it really drove me crazy because the story I wanted to tell was about the experience of being loved and failed at the same time, the experience of growing up in a household where there was quite a lot of violence. And also there was tremendous grace and beauty and love, and that it was overwhelming and confusing, and it was all there.
I did pick up on this contrast between moments of violence and moments of tenderness. Mm-hmm. For me, one of the most poignant scenes in the novel was when the father, who is often violent, or there are allusions to his violence, is bathing his teenage mm-hmm. son. Mm-hmm. Was it hard for you to strike that balance, to capture both at the same time?
It was. I think what you've nailed what was kind of the central organizing idea of the entire project, which was to always have both, right? I mean, it's not a very plotted novel, but the tension that exists in the chapters and the tension that exists throughout the book is you never know whether this is heading towards a moment of tenderness or a moment of violence or something else, right? You're just not sure. You're like, what? And you're on the edge of your seat because you're like, I honestly don't know what's going to happen, right? I tried to write the characters from the perspective of the youngest child who also doesn't know. I mean, one of the amazing things about being a child is that you're so open to experience. And so you're ready. I mean, you can have very intense parents who sometimes fail you, sometimes scoop you up and spin you in the air and love you, and you're always ready to be scooped up, right? It takes time to learn to kind of close yourself off to those moments of tenderness because there's the risk of those moments of violence. As an adult, I think I move through the world much more guarded and defended, but I wanted to write about that experience of being a child where you're so open.
Was it difficult for you to tap into that childlike perspective writing as a grown man?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's a retrospective narration. So it's not, I didn't write from the perspective of a child, right? Like there are books that do this, but I did try and get the immediacy of that perspective. And that's what I focused on. I was like, I'll keep this as immediate as possible, and in that way you'll feel like it's a child narrating it, because there's not a lot of like deep introspective, not a lot of reflection on what's going on. There's just descriptions of what's going on.
In terms of narration, We the Animals is also mostly written in the first person plural, which mm-hmm. is rare. Mm-hmm. So why did you decide to use that type of narration?
I mean, the honest answer is that the opening of the book was something I wrote very early on. And it opens, and it's kind of like a chant. That first chapter is, you know, it's like we wanted more, and there's that repetition of we wanted this, we wanted this, right? And I just liked it. I liked it. And I rarely like what I write. Like, almost never do I like what I write. So I was like, oh, I like this. I want this to be the opening. And then I had the problem of, where do I go from here? Do I stay entirely in the first person plural? And then so I thought a lot about, well, why is this in the first person plural? What am I trying to say about the kind of sense of this child's place in the world, right? And the idea is that he doesn't really know where he ends and his brothers begin. There's such a pack that his sense of identity is so enmeshed in theirs. And then there are these moments where it slips into I, and he feels outside the family, and he feels very separate and very different from the family. And I realized that that's what I wanted to write about. And so the first person plural dominates most of the book. especially the beginning, and you get more and more moments where it's singular I as the book goes on. And then at the end of the book, there's this you, there's a second person, right? You, and there's they, which I think is like very clever because now he's kind of disassociating and it's the very end of the book. Most people don't even notice it, but I was proud of it.
I know that as I was reading it, I definitely picked up on the we, the I, and the they at the mm-hmm. end. And I actually did want to talk to you about that.
Yeah.
As the boys get older, the narrator, who is the youngest brother, begins to question his sexuality. Mm-hmm. His brothers and parents recognize that there's something different about him, and they eventually read his journal, which is full of his sexual fantasies. This leads to the narrator's breakdown, his subsequent hospitalization in a psychiatric ward. And as this is happening, that's when I really noticed the narration change from mm-hmm. the we to the they, the boy, the father, the mother. And it seemed much more detached. And I wondered if that was purposeful, what you were hoping to accomplish with that shift.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think that the structure of my personal experience with family was that I was kind of suddenly ejected from the family. Suddenly everything changed at a certain point, a certain hour on a certain day. Like everything was different. And that's just the way that's the way it was with my life. And after that, there was this rupture and nothing was ever the same. So I wanted the reader to be kind of lulled into a sense of, I get this family, right? You're reading these episodic moments, right? They're all kind of around the same age, right? He's 6, 7, around there, right? And you're lulled, you're absolutely lulled into the sense of this family. And then there's this jump, and it seems like you're reading a different book.
It was disorienting for me as the reader. Wait.
Yeah, exactly. That's what did I miss something? Like, that's what I want. It's just the rug's been pulled out from under you, and suddenly he's older, everything's changed. And I wanted it to feel like a punch in the gut. That's the structure I was going for, the structure of a punch in the gut. I mean, it turns out people don't like to be punched in the gut that much. So a lot of people take issue with the way that the book ends, but it doesn't end neatly. And it doesn't end in a clear way. It doesn't end in a comfortable place. And that was important to me because of kind of the truth I wanted to tell.
It's also my understanding that this situation did happen in your own life.
Yeah.
What actually happened?
What actually happened? I mean, who knows? Lots of things happened, more than I could ever get into here or whatever I get into. I think that what did happen is that I was put in a mental hospital, and that it was for me something that it took me many years to forgive. And there was this rupture after that, and I was kind of on my own, at least in my mind, right? I think that is it's not an uncommon narrative for queer children. Maybe less so now as time goes on. But I think that I wouldn't say that I was put in the hospital because I was gay, but also I wouldn't say that the opposite, right? Like, it's also both things are true at once. But people are put in mental hospital strictly because they're queer, or at least historically they have been. People lose their place in family when they come out. There are so many queer homeless youth who've been forced out of family. There's lots of different ways that it can go down. And so I think that what happened is private to a certain extent, but the context in which it happened is important for me to talk about until things change.
How long were you hospitalized?
For months. I mean, again, it's not something that like I talk about too much, you know. Yeah, Yeah.
Since you don't talk about it much, was it difficult then to put it into writing? Was that a hard experience to write about?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in the book, you'll notice that it's very poetically alluded to, mm-hmm. right? I mean, there's really one page on at the very end, and it's really half a page, and the language is completely poetic and symbolic, and you can read it as him being put in a mental hospital, but you don't have to. There are other ways to read it as well. The idea is that he's in a new world and he's with a new bunch of animals and that he's in a new pack. That's the idea, and it can be it's open to interpretation. I purposely didn't write it. I didn't say this character goes into a mental hospital because I didn't want to talk about it in interviews for the rest of my life. It didn't work. Yeah.
So his original pack was his brother's. And mm-hmm. I know that you even mentioned in your own life there was that kind of rupture in your relationship and you were trying to write your way back to them. Did that work? What is your relationship like with your family today?
I think that I started doing that in a very personal way. That's why I started writing. That's why I started writing about these characters and these people. As the book progressed, I realized, oh, I'm writing a book. This is fiction. This is a novel. This is any hope that this would ameliorate things or ease things with my family, that was no longer a concern. I started writing for myself. But when I realized that I was writing a novel, I started writing a novel for the sake of the novel. You know what I mean? It definitely had an effect on my relationship with my family, for sure. It's definitely there. And the film, obviously. I mean, that these works of art exist in the world is kind of in between every interaction I have with my family members. But I didn't, by the time the book was published, I didn't expect anything concrete to come out of any healing or anything like that. Yeah.
So have they read the novel? How did they react?
Yeah, they have. I think they've all read it. I know my mother has. I know my father has. Yeah, the reactions have ranged. The reaction changes over time. I mean, it came out in 2011, and so I think there's initial reactions and there are subsequent reactions. You know, it's complicated. It's my mother's very proud of me. My mother's very proud of me. She's my mother. She wants to be proud of me, you know? I think that she's taken issue with representations, I'm sure. And we don't talk about it too much, kind of head on, I think, for everybody's sake.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Addison Godfrey. Our guest is Justin Torres, whose debut coming-of-age novel, We the Animals, focuses on three brothers growing up together and the joy, challenges, and general messiness that entails. The novel was adapted into a major motion picture that was released in August. Justin, I haven't had a chance to see the movie yet, mm-hmm. but how do you think We the Animals translates to the big screen?
Oh, it's so good. It's so good. You gotta see it. I really like it a lot. It's interesting. I know a few people. It's not like I know a ton of people, but I know a few people who've written books and they've been made into films, and a lot of them feel ambivalent or they just outright hate the adaptation. And I love it. I think that it's the director, Jeremiah Zagar, worked very closely with me. And he's really good. I've loved his first film, which is called In a Dream, which is a documentary. It's wonderful. And he really was quite seductive in getting me to be involved. At first I was like, no, I don't want to write the script with you. I don't want to be that involved because I've already signed the rights away. If it's terrible, I don't want my name on it. I'd given up control, right? But then when I saw the first draft of the script, I was like, oh, this is actually really good. How can I help? How can I help make it better? And so kind of from that moment on, I was super involved, and it was a 6-year process, and I was there for casting, I was there for the shoot, I was there, you know, I was in editing, I was giving notes on early cuts of the film. The result is wonderful. I don't take credit for it, but it's good. It's a kind of dark, artsy, very emotional, wild film, and that's all I ever wanted.
What do you think the benefit was to your involvement in the film?
I think that there's, I mean, one of the things that I did was just like put back in lines of dialogue from the book, like the, you know, we'd, on set, like they're be shooting something, and Jeremiah would be like, I don't know, it's not quite working. I feel like he needs to say something in response, and I was like, well, you know, in the book, he says this line, and like I thought about what he's gonna say for weeks, and I came up with this line, and so maybe we should just use that, and then we would. I think that that's like the kind of small benefit of my input and my involvement, but also like I really my biggest concerns were that it would be some kind of poverty porn.
What do you mean by that?
I just think that there are representations out there that are about kind of like, oh, look at these people. Look at their kind of exquisite poverty. They're nothing like us. They're like, you know what I mean? They're just like completely foreign beings. And we can look at them utterly objectifying them, right? In the way that pornography works, right? Where you forget that these are humans, right? You're looking at it for arousal, stimulation, titillation, and you're not looking for the humanity there. You're not trying to be like, who is this person? I didn't want that. And so I think that any time that it felt like maybe it was going to veer into that, I was there to kind of push. I wanted as complicated representations as possible. The other thing that I didn't want is I didn't want the queerness of the book to be erased. Because one of the things that happens in the film is that it ends and he's much younger. He's only like 10 at the end of the film.
So there's not that same big jump.
There's not the same big jump. And so the kind of sexual experience that he has at the end of the book, he can't have because he's only 10. So we found ways of making sure that it's still very much a queer film, and it's still very much about sexuality, as much as it's about other things like racism and classism and violence and everything else that the book is about. And so that was something that I was like there for and very adamant about. It was good. It was good to be like, these are the themes that are incredibly important to me. And every time, and whenever like I feel like there's not enough of them in there, I can make sure, kind of push back on the film and make sure that they get in there.
Were there any particular challenges in translating the book to the film?
Oh, sure, yeah. So, like I said, they didn't want to use two different actors because they thought you would lose the emotional connection to the main character, to the child, and so they had to make him a little bit older. So he begins and he's 9 rather than 6, and he ends and he's 10 rather than a teenager. And that was quite a big challenge to move the material kind of around that. I think it's successful, but that was hard. I mean, for me personally, there was a lot of moments on set that were challenging.
Like what? Could you give an example or talk about one?
I'll give a funny anecdote.
Okay.
The actor who plays the father Pops is this actor, Raul Castillo, who's incredibly talented. But Raul is also very attractive. He's just a very sexy guy. And so, you know, he's performing in the scene, like saying lines that are written based on things that my father said, you know, that like, it's all two steps removed, right? It's a fictional character who's not really like my father, but based on my father, and then another movie version, yada, yada. But still, there's like some weird essence where it's like, here's this guy, like in his underwear, like acting out this scene, and I'm like, dad, like it's really, it was really bizarre. It was very kind of like Freudian, and like made me think a lot about everything. You know, it's just weird. It's weird to, I mean, you can imagine if somebody just took your life story and then put it through various fictional iterations, and then there was a film. I mean, it's disorienting. Yeah.
What about that same balance between the violence and the tenderness? Was that hard to capture?
Yeah, it was. You know, there are certain things that happen in the book, like the father punches one of the boys. And when you're reading, you can kind of scale that punch to what you're comfortable with, right? The thing about reading is that everybody processes violence differently based on their experience with violence or what they're ready for or what they want to believe or what they can handle. And you can put a book down if you don't like it and pause and return to it when you're ready. And there's something about the visual where when you film a grown man hitting a child, when you see it like that, you kind of just can't forgive him. Like a lot of the complexity that goes into that character evaporates, right? Because you're just like, it just, you see that punch. And it was very important that the father be understood as a complicated person full of immense tenderness who is also failing really badly and under enormous pressure from the larger world. And so that punch, like, doesn't make it into the film, right? Like, it was cut from the film because it was, all of the kind of tenderness was forgotten when she saw that, you know? And so how not to make people monsters and still show violence, right? I think it was challenging. It's more challenging in the visual realm, I think, than it is in the literary realm, where you have space to play with and words and context to kind of buffer some of that.
What do you hope people who see the film or read the book will take away?
That's a good question. I think that what happens in the film and is that this journal that comes up at the end of the book is much more visual. It's animated. So it's literally animated in the film. And he's drawing much of the journal rather than writing it. But obviously, writing the journal or drawing or whatever, making art from your experience and painful experiences is central to the plot of both and central to my life. And so I guess I just think that everybody kind of walks around with whatever pain they have on their hands, right? I mean, we all just like kind of walk through the world and we're carrying whatever we're carrying. And one thing that you can do with it is make art out of it. And so I guess my kind of wildest hope is that people go into the film or they read the book and they're like, I want to make art. I think that's a wonderful message to come away with.
Justin Torres, thank you for talking with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Justin Torres is the author of the national bestseller, We the Animals. The film adaptation will be released on DVD and Blu-ray on November 20th. To listen to more Take Note interviews, go to our website at wpsu.org/take note. I'm Addison Godfrey, WPSU.